This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania.
Millions of women have been heading back into the workplace after taking a break due to the pandemic and the need to help out with families. But the issue of them returning to the workplace after an extended break brings up an issue that can block that return, a failure at times to incorporate network connections established in the past. Tianten Yang is an assistant professor of management here at the Wharton School and has taken a deeper dive into this and joins us right now. Tianten, great to have you with us. Thanks very much for your time today.
Hi, Dan. How are you? Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much, and I greatly appreciate you joining us. And let me start out just with what was the reasoning that you wanted to look to this aspect of the return to the workplace?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have always been interested in women's careers. And, you know, when we want to understand women's careers, the having children, becoming a mother is the turning point. And the vast majority of the literature has focused on the kind of employer discrimination mothers face when they re-enter the labor force. But we know so much less about the kind of barriers women encounter before they even reach the stage of being interviewed. So I have started to look at questions about how do they decide to re-enter the labor force? And if they decide to re-enter the labor force in the process, and how do they explore what kind of methods they should use to look for a job?
What seemingly are the best ways then for somebody to try and return to the workforce, especially if they've had an extended period away?
Yes, so I think the default assumption a lot of people have in the modern contemporary world is to use internet to find the information online, to submit an application. But networks still plays a predominant role in successful job seeking. So that's where we should expect mothers who have left their own workforce to take care of children to use network when they try to re-enter the workforce. Actually, this is a question that hasn't been explored at all because people always assume that individuals will use network when they look for jobs or they'll try many different kinds of methods in order to get a job. So we were fortunate to find a large-scale data set that has information on at what point women take a parental leave and at what point they start to look for a job and the wider range of methods that they have used to look for a job. So we first established a pattern that women with parental leave are much less likely to use their network to look for jobs. So they're less likely to activate their network for job seeking. And then we use qualitative interview data, the interviews with women, to unpack the reason why they're less likely to use networks.
Because I think that the assumption would be the value of the network, especially in a situation where you had been out of the workforce for a while, the value of the network can be very, very high, especially when you're trying to get back in after, you know, a lengthy period of time.
Exactly. And, you know, when we look at this phenomenon of women leaving workforce when they have children, it's very prevalent. So we look at data in the United States, in the United Kingdom, and other OECD countries. So the gap in labor force participation between men and women becomes much larger during childbearing years. That's when women started to leave the workforce. But many of them will try to return, but the process of return can be more challenging if they don't draw on networks. So there is a question of why don't they draw on networks? So when I look at the literature, there are two possible explanations. One is that, okay, maybe women, when they are staying home taking care of their children, they have fewer networks with the coworkers, right? So there are the instrumental ties become, they have fewer instrumental ties. The other possible explanation is network decay, which means that their networks with coworkers, friends become weaker, so are less willing to tap on the social connections. But then the interviews we did with 55 women were completely different, which revealed new insights into the phenomenon.
One of the other things that you bring up is the expectation of what job they are going to be able to get when they go back into the workforce, and the fact that it may not be at the same level. In fact, it might be at a lower level than the job they had when they left the workforce.
Yes. So this has a lot to do with the kind of perception they have about the extent to which they could work full time. And this is also one of the reasons why they kind of stay away from their social networks when they look for jobs. So we found that women are less likely to ask networks to ask people to introduce them to jobs or even write them reference letters. The reason we frame this explanation as a burden of reciprocity. So when people ask others for help, even very simple things, introducing them to potential employers, what they have in mind is whether they will have the ability to reciprocate in the future. For example, right. Whether they will be very good employees in the future. But for women who have been at home for a few years taking care of the children, they worried about their lack of skills, updated skills for doing a job. And they also worried about, for example, in a few years when their kids go to elementary school, whether the kids will go to school, they leave school very early. The school tend to finish around noon or 1 p.m., 3 p.m., so very early. So yeah. Women worried about the situation that they have to leave work very early to pick up their kids. So even though they're re-entering the workforce, they're anticipating some kind of career interruptions again when their children go to elementary school. So those concerns kind of constrain them from really actively seeking help from other people.
And not that it's directly, you know, part of the research that you did right here, but I think it becomes important in terms of where we are right now, is the component of work and the perception of what the job can be, especially if you're somebody that needs to be remote, you know, a couple of days a week or whatever the scenario might be.
Yes, I think remote work, hybrid work is like one of the most important topics that we're trying to engage now. Nearly every organization is trying to figure out. So the issue about providing options to employees is that it may actually allow women with children mothers to have greater work-life balance because they can decide at what point they can work from home so they can have time to take care of children, also reduce commuting, save some time from commuting, and also get their work done. So I think the question a lot of employers have is if you allow people to work from home, whether they will actually increase the cost of coordination. For example, some people will work in the office, other people will work from home, whether that will actually make coordination a little bit harder. So I think in our research, we actually found that allowing people to have autonomy, to have the discretion to decide how many days they will work from home. They tend to work home for 2 days. And this kind of option actually allows everybody to be more productive, also to experience less work-family conflicts. So across the board, everyone can be benefiting from the options for hybrid work, remote work that employers provide. And even when those options are provided, people still go to the office for 3 out of 5 days. So there are real benefits of embracing hybrid work.
This work that you've done right here would seemingly kind of reinforce the importance that networks have in the workplace, doesn't it?
Yeah, it is really, really important. I think it's not only about having the network, also about individuals' perception of themselves as ideal workers. So if workplaces are greedy institutions that demand individuals to work as if they don't have any family responsibilities, those with family responsibilities will less likely to activate their network to look for jobs, to re-enter the workforce because they have the perception that they won't be able to fulfill that kind of expectation, right. And they worry about jeopardizing the reputation of their networks. And I think another thing I want to emphasize is that, you know, in this long process of looking for jobs, many of the women we interviewed actually experienced a lot of discrimination. So a lot of questions employers ask them about are like, oh, your kids are so young, then what are you going to do when the kids are sick and at home? Are you going to just drop the work and go home? And also there, the questions employers ask to mothers and non-mothers are completely different. So a lot of our interviewees reported that they experienced the discrimination, and that hurt their self-confidence even more because they can see how employers are perceiving them as not ideal workers, their inability to be the ideal workers, which even further prevented them from actively seeking for help. So there are a lot of socio-psychological barriers in their networking, which we haven't understood before.
And so those barriers really carry more weight than even just the level of productivity that somebody might have. I mean, if they're working remotely, they could be, you know, obviously doing great work in the office, but they could be doing even a better, more exceptional work when they are home because of some of those dynamics that they know are in play.
Yes, I think that when it comes to staying productive, and first of all, I would say that, you know, because we also interviewed a lot of people who are non-mothers or mothers without parental leave, we found that there are some real benefit of staying in the workforce. Because even if you're working part-time, you're more likely to stay updated with the skills and also maintain your confidence in yourself. And when it comes to the ability to work, a hybrid work and a remote work do provide more flexibility for people to work at the time that they could work. So if they have to juggle family responsibilities and work, it really increases stress, perceived work-family conflict. But if they have the option to work at a time that they could work, it really increases their well-being.
You mentioned that you did this study with in Korea, and you mentioned it in your paper that I think the dynamics of what the work week and what work is expected to be in Korea also needs to factor into the expectation of getting back into the workforce and the dynamics at play as well, right?
Yes. So our data are from Korea because we really need to have longitudinal data sets, women, men, to cover their family events, whether they take leave or not, what kind of job search methods they use. So we couldn't find a comparable large-scale data sets in the United States. And we also interviewed Korean women. Of course, there are some contextual factors such as national context, culture, so on and so forth. But I think many of the findings also apply to the U.S. For example, the ideal worker norms are perhaps even more stronger in the United States. And if you look at women's labor participation rate in the U.S. Among mothers, it's also the case that women are much more likely to leave the workforce when they have children. And another aspect, I think parents, especially mothers, experience probably more intensified work-family conflict when they have young children because a lot of employees don't have paid parental leave. A lot of families only have 6 weeks, longest, and they also don't have, in terms of cultural norm, they don't have a lot of family support. So in that scenario, the women, many mothers are forced to take parental leave and stay home. So usually the gap is about 2 years in the United States. But the longer the gap, the harder to re-enter the workforce.
What did you take from doing this research that will probably be, what's the takeaway that you think from this research that both people and companies should realize about the dynamics of return to work?
I think that the notion of flexible workplace is a really important one. I think a lot of the discussions we have right now about flexible workplaces and hybrid work is really helpful because it started to challenge the old assumption that the workplace, there is only one type of workplace that increases productivity, which is, requires everybody to come to work in person. I think now a lot of organizations have started to think that maybe the workplaces need to be more flexible, which means that they can accommodate different types of needs for people who can work better from home for a few days. That option should be applied, should be made available. So that will be very helpful. But I think on the supply side, in terms of from the women's own perspectives, I think it's also important to realize, you know, some of the psychological hurdles that prevent them from actively seeking help, they should know the consequences because it is much harder to find a good job, upper level positions or a well paid job without the help of network. So if you really care about the career consequences, I think there must be ways to overcome the kind of psychological hurdles about losing face, worrying about status, burdening social networks. I think the open, more open conversations between women and their support network will be very helpful.
Tian-Tian, great to talk with you. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you so much. Really enjoy the conversation.
Thank you. You too as well. Tian-Tian Yang, who is Assistant Professor of Management here at the Wharton School.
To explore more content from the Wharton School, visit knowledge.wharton.upenn.edu.